Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Terra Nullius Cyprus, coming to you from Melbourne down under in Australia. I want to say, first of all, before I introduce the guest today, I want to say a big thank you to the Centre of Visual Arts and Research, the CVAR Servetus Foundation, for their kind assistance with this podcast, and the delightful and delicious Limoncello in Nicosia at Ayos Antonis Market for their support as well. My very special guest today is somebody who I've known for many, many, many years, Mr. Yannis Milidis, who was born 15 years before 1974. So I'll let you do the maths. He's from Gadozodia, which is near Morfou. He left Cyprus as a refugee in 1974. And we are here today in Melbourne, where he lives with his family and where he works. He's been an educator for many, many years. I first met him when I was in primary school, doing Greek school on Saturdays and some weeknights. And he was just telling me as we're preparing that I sent him a letter from Cyprus when I first visited in 1990. So here I am, 34 years later after that letter, catching up in the flesh again. And welcome to the podcast. It's so good to see you.
Costa, it's lovely to see you. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast. And as I said to you before the interview, I kept that letter, that postcard actually, that you sent me from Cyprus, because he was so kind. And I made a prediction then that this boy is sensitive and he has a great future. And there you are.
Well, thank you. You really make me feel blush. I don't even know. But thank you. Look, honestly, I really appreciate that. And you've always had a special part in my life and in my heart, because you were my favorite Greek school teacher. And to be frank with you, I think you're the only Greek school teacher that I actually remember and cared for. So yeah, that says something about you. And I've spoken with some other Greek Australian and Cypriot Australian friends of mine that shared your classes, and they all remembered you. Now, I have to tell you a little joke, because you probably knew this, but when we were young, I had called you by accident. Instead of Mr. Milidis, I called you Mr. Molivi, which means pen or pencil. And I remember from that day onwards, all of the kids in class, and especially the girls, because you were much younger back then, you were this handsome, slim teacher, and we used to call him Mr. Pencil, but in a very complimentary way. And in hindsight, it was kind of serendipitous that you would be called that, because pencil, pens, you associated with teachers and educators.
So, and writing.
Yeah, and writing, exactly. So now, actually, let's go straight into this. I want to work backwards here. Let's come to the current day. You were recently in Cyprus in September 2023 for the launch of a book. And I'm actually holding three books in front of me right now, which you've helped to produce and translate. Now, two of them have been done through the Mary Mead Catholic College here in the... It's South Morang there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
In South Morang, in Melbourne's northern suburbs. Melbourne's northern suburbs, as many people might know, is a very Cypriot-centric area as well. There's lots of Cypriots in this area. But of course, Melbourne being a multicultural city, we have every ethnicity and religion and economic class and political class under the sun, mostly coexisting. So Mary Mead is a relatively new school for the area, and an impressive one. And they're very lucky to have you, John. And also I have the book Famagusta Regina, which was translated by you, which was written in Greek originally by Kyriakos Haralambidis. Let's work backward. Let's start with the Famagusta Regina. Tell us a little bit about this. Tell us about how you brought it to Cyprus, and let's work from there.
It's a good point to start, actually, because when I finished university here, I studied mechanical engineering, and I had in the second year I had a huge car accident which put me in hospital for 4 months. And I survived that, but I decided to become a teacher instead of an engineer.
I think so, it suits you better.
So I changed my direction, and I studied English, mathematics, and Greek, of course. Mm-hmm. And
where did you study?
I studied at La Trobe University.
Yes.
And then at Melbourne University as well. Mm-hmm. And when I finished, the university offered me a lecturer's job. Instead of letting me become a high school teacher, they said, John, we want you here. So I was teaching at university, and started off with Monash and then at Deakin University. Mm-hmm. And at Deakin, I we were visited by Professor Yorgos Kechayoglou from the University of Thessaloniki on his sabbatical.
Yep.
And he actually gave us lectures on Greek Cypriot literature. And I was really, really surprised because since I was 15, I didn't know much about Cyprus and the literature of Cyprus after the war. So I asked him if he could help me to recommend some books for me. And actually, I was going that year to Cyprus, and he could help me meet some of the great authors and poets.
Mm.
So he gave me a list of names, and one of them was Kyriakos Haralambidis, whom I went to RIC.
Mm-hmm.
And I introduced myself that I'm a young lecturer at the university, studying the last 3 years, and I want to start teaching Cypriot literature as well to my students. And he opened his arms, of course. Kyriakos is a very hospitable and very friendly person.
Yep.
He gave me his books, and when I read Famagusta and also Tholos, the book on the missing persons, mm-hmm. which I also translated, that was my first translation.
Yep. Tholos, was it?
Tholos, mm-hmm. and Amochostos Vasilevousa.
Yep.
I was really amazed at the quality of the poetry.
Yep.
I was amazed that such a person like Kyriakos had the strength to turn the martyrdom and the suffering of the missing persons and their relatives into a book. That takes a lot of daring.
Yeah.
To make someone else's pain into a story.
Mm.
It takes a lot of strength and courage and bravery. And I started teaching them at university, those two books, with permission, of course, from the university. Yeah. And I kept them in the back of my mind all these years. I wanted to do something with them. So I thought the idea came from Professor Kechayoglou. He approached me because he was giving a lecture in America, and he approached me to translate poetry for him, Cypriot poetry. And that was the start of my translation career. I was encouraged by Professor Kechayoglou. Mm-hmm. I did a translation for him. He went to America, presented the lecture, wrote back to me. And after that, he said to me, John, you should start translating poetry, yeah. Cypriot poetry. So the first book was Tholos. It was published by La Trobe University, where I was teaching later on. And then the second book was Famagusta, Amochostos Vasilevousa.
Your students were predominantly Greek-Australian students?
Yes, we were teaching Greek-Australian students. At La Trobe, I had some classes that were beginners classes. Mm-hmm. So I taught there for about 8 years, beginners classes. I taught Greek to many, many Australians.
Yeah.
Some of whom went to Greece and loved it and stayed there.
No, because I do remember your time at La Trobe University, and I do remember my time at La Trobe University as a student. It always fascinated me when non-Greek background or Hellenic background Australians would take these Greek classes. I remember there was a guy from Kosovo. He was a Serb from Kosovo. I remember there was two Turkish students. I remember a few Anglo-Saxon Australians. And I remember thinking, you know, that's so fascinating because they're not learning ancient Greek because they're interested in archaeology. They were learning modern Greek and literature and whatnot. Yeah. So I found that very fascinating. I mean, we have lots of, you know, Greek heritage students who aren't interested in learning the language and understandably living in the new world now. But it was just fascinating to see other people. And I'm sure having a teacher like yourself would have inspired them, having such fascinating literature to read as well, such as Famagusta Regina and Tholos. Now, Tholos in English means...
Dome.
Dome, correct. Dome. Yeah, for those that don't know. So now, last year, you were in Cyprus with the book Famagusta Regina, Amochostos Vasilevos.
Yes, that's right. We published it during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really, really... upset that the book wasn't becoming known because I compensatorily and many other people, we consider this book as one of the best ever written.
Out of Cyprus or in general?
In general, okay. In Greek literature.
Wow.
I don't think that it has been given the attention it should be given to. It's difficult poetry.
Yeah.
But I think that one day everyone is going to treat this book as a Bible.
I'm sure that this would be very well received from your Varoshodes, like your Greek Cypriots from Varosi and from Augusta, because it would speak directly to them. It's from their town. I mean, I've only just glanced at this, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. And I can't thank you enough for giving me a copy of it. But this is, I don't want to say it's worth its weight in gold, because it's worth a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But I can't thank you enough. Now, Kyriakos Haralambidis, he still lives in Cyprus.
Yeah,
he was
present at the launch. Yeah, we launched it at the University of Nicosia. Dr. Dimitra Dimitriou from the University of Nicosia launched it.
Yep.
It was very well received. Mrs. Ratoko Zaku
Markoulis
was there, the previous foreign minister. And she came and actually she publicly said that after seeing this book, she said that this book should be given to every European member of parliament.
I agree with that. And I think it's also good that here in Australia, people are seeing it, because whilst the Cyprus problem and all its complexities may be to the Cypriots huge and all-encompassing, on the global scale, it may seem small compared to Gaza, Israel, compared to Syria. It may seem small. However, what happens in Cyprus is something that can be replicated and have a domino effect around the world. So where there is injustice, it spreads. Where there is chaos, it spreads. Where there is pain, it spreads. If Cyprus could be a beacon of hope and unity and peace, it would spread, especially in the region that we live in. So I think people need to understand the pain of not just the Greek Cypriots, the Turkish Cypriots as well. They need to understand the pain of all Cypriots and all residents of the island. And when I say all residents, I say that on purpose, because there are people in Cyprus that are from post-1974. For example, we have Syrian refugees today. These are people that we as Cypriots are obliged to integrate and work with. Now, whether it's so they can eventually go back to a peaceful Syria, whether it's so they can integrate into a Cypriot society, or whether it's so they can move on towards Europe or wherever their next stop is. Cyprus is more than just one fleeting moment in time. For example, the 1974 invasion, which this year is the 50th anniversary. It's more than the so-called fasarias, the troubles of the 60s, which are now 60 years ago. It's more than that. And books like this will help people bridge the past with the future, the culture, the arts, with the realities of the day-to-day living.
Very fine point you're making.
Yeah.
And if I can add to that, it's through books that you realize the character of a nation.
I couldn't agree more with that.
And this book shows the character of Cypriots, not only Greek Cypriots, Turkish Cypriots as well, because Haralambidis writes the history of Famagusta in poetry, the history of Famagusta for many, many hundreds of years. And that shows that people were living in harmony.
Yep.
Yes, there were conflicts. Yes, there were wars. Yes, there was conquering.
And that has been the case.
But also there was high culture in this city of Famagusta.
I want to pull that comment out for a second.
Yes.
The concept of high culture.
Yes.
Because Cypriots themselves are their worst enemy when it comes to promoting Cypriot culture and its richness. We tend to, especially in the diaspora where we are now, the diaspora tends to throw Cyprus under the Greek bus, that it's just another part of the Greek world, or it's just the Hellenic world, or the Turkish Cypriots might say it's part of the Turkish world. And whilst, yes, there are interrelations between the Greek and Turkish worlds, Cyprus, much like different parts of each other country, like whether it's Crete or whether it's, I don't know, Eastern Turkey, whatever, they are rich, unique, dynamic, cultural, independent areas that if we're not celebrating and sharing this culture, it will be lost.
Exactly.
This comes down to whether it's the dialects we have in Cyprus, whether it's the poetry, whether it's the arts. I mean, I get very emotional recently when I found the art gallery in Ayia Napa, which had the artworks that were salvaged from Varosha that were for the last 40, 50 years that were held in storage in the north, were given back in a confidence building measure. And now there's a art gallery in the Thalassa Museum in Ayia Napa. And you can see these beautiful quality cultural pieces of artworks done by Cypriots. And well, speaking of our sponsors,
which were celebrated by both Turkish and
Greek
Cypriots before 1974.
Exactly. There's so, Turkish artists exactly. as well. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that İsmet Güney, for example, is a Turkish Cypriot that designed our flag. You know, yes. he's a Turkish Cypriot. I mean, you know, it's all these.
And the famous painting, The World of Cyprus by Diamandis.
Yeah, Diamandis,
who has Turkish Cypriots in the painting.
Exactly, exactly. And actually.
And that is high culture.
That is high culture. That is high culture. I actually had the honor of meeting his grandson in Cyprus last year. He lives in Melbourne.
Mm.
And hearing him talk about his grandfather's stories and his grandfather's artworks. And Diamandis, a lot of people don't realize, actually had spent time in Australia. He was in Adelaide. Mm. So he even had some artworks that have kangaroos on them, which are now somewhere in Cyprus in storage, and it's my dream to get them on show sooner or later. But look, artwork, culture also covers things like archaeological sites that we forget about. Even is the restaurant and cafe scene. I mean, culture is everywhere, and we don't appreciate it enough in Cyprus. Mm. And I think that some of my podcasts recently have included people that are running music festivals and you know, cultural gatherings in multicultural festivals. So I really want to see them being more and more promoted, much like we see here in Australia. Like, I mean, there's some other Australian Cypriots who I've been talking to recently. They participated in the Buffer Fringe Festival in Nicosia.
Yeah,
they delivered some really amazing things there. And the Buffer Fringe Festival is fantastic as well. I mean, it's baby steps, but we need to keep pushing. And I think that Cyprus, and one of the reasons why I'm enjoying podcasting from Australia, is showing that Cyprus is not just on that little island.
Mm.
It's global.
Mm.
Just like Greece is global, just like Italy is global, just like England is, the UK is global, so is Cyprus.
Yes, and I also add something about the literature of Cyprus, mm-hmm. the books of Cyprus. I am very proud of the young generation, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they've shown that although they're, half the island is occupied by a military force from Turkey,
mm-hmm.
in their books, they show the same pain, the same understanding for the Turkish Cypriots, mm-hmm. not only for the Greek Cypriots. The suffering is common.
Yes.
In their books, they haven't become nationalistic
mm-hmm.
or racist.
Yeah.
And they should be proud of themselves. And I'm making a point here of let's use these books from mm-hmm. Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently actually translating a book about Charita Mandoules, who is the most tragic person in Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
She had 12 members of her family executed in front of her, mm-hmm. including her husband and her grandfather
mm-hmm.
and her father and the husbands of her two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when she decided to cross and go for the first time back to Kyrenia, which it took 35 years for a journalist to convince her to go back to find the graves of her 12 missing persons, she did something unimaginable. On their way, after they found the graves
mm-hmm.
of the missing persons in a mass grave, on their way back, they told her there's a village where some Greek terrorists, extremists, went and killed four sons of this mother, mm-hmm. Turkish Cypriot mother. And they asked her, would you like to meet her? And she said, yes.
See, these are stories we don't hear about.
And not only she went and met her, but Charita Mandoules mm-hmm. bowed and kissed her hand.
Beautiful.
And put her in her arms, and they both cried together.
Because they share the same pain.
But it takes it takes a person like the author, who is Evridike Periklos Papadopoulou.
The name again?
Evridike Periklos Papadopoulou wrote the story of Charita in a 500-page book from the time she was young, the happy times, to the times she's suffering. But to me, that is a valuable book, not only for Cypriots. It shows the world, although we've suffered so much and we're still suffering because half of our homes are occupied by military people, yet we don't hate the other element of Cyprus, which is the Turkish Cypriots.
No, that is beautiful. I mean, like, I didn't actually know this story about Charita Mandoules, and that's actually really beautiful because, unfortunately, a lot of the mass media likes to take advantage of certain situations and portray things a certain way. And she has been the face of the pain of the Greek Cypriots.
Mm.
I'm glad that you shared that with me, and I look forward to see this book because I would like to push that because if anyone's voice deserves to be heard, it's Harita Mandolas' voice. And if she's telling us that we need to embrace the suffering of the others.
Exactly.
I mean, who am I to say no to that?
And the current leader of the Turkish Cypriots, who is actually, you know, wants to break away and create his own state.
Mm.
Whereas the Turkish Cypriots voted overwhelmingly to join with the Greek Cypriots for a common nation, a common state.
Mm-hmm.
Our books are the answer to him. Yeah. But Mr. Tatar, we're not hating the Turkish Cypriots. We can live together. We're the majority, and yes, we want to put you, you know, on a stool as the same as height as ours, and share government and share power.
Yeah.
So the idea of translating also in English, because it's a language spoken all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a great idea. That's why you asked me before.
Yeah.
I'm currently translating this book about Harita Mandolas in English, and a very fine man, Mr. Nick Walker of Australian Scholarly Publishing, has accepted it to publish it as well.
Oh, fantastic. That's actually a good publisher,
So there's an Australian publisher who's willing to publish these stories.
So we should be seeing you back in Cyprus for the book launch of that. Okay, that's I'm looking forward to that. We're gonna come back to that when the time comes.
Yeah.
I'm holding another two books in front of me now. One is Poetic Voices from Black Saturday. Now, are we talking the Black Saturday bushfires?
Exactly. 1999, February the 6th.
February the 6th, 1999,
In the area where you grew up,
we
lost 140 members of our community. There was 175 people died in the fires, 140 in our area of Whittlesea and King Lake.
I remember I was in Cyprus at the time, and it was, I mean, even now my skin crawls. It broke my heart to see the massive forests around this area, between where we are now in Mill Park, all the way up to King Lake and around. I mean, these horrific fires that just ravaged the area, killed
145
people in our area. And these are people that, I mean, I do actually know two people. They weren't friends, they were acquaintances, but I can name two people that were amongst them. You have to think of this part of Melbourne as a bit of a Cyprus, where everyone in these suburbs and town around here, they know each other. It's the familiar faces when you go to the supermarket. Mm. So it was a tragedy. So now
there was a royal commission about the fires.
Yep.
And when I started reading the testimonies of the people who suffered and who lost a family, I was really shocked. And I asked myself, 145 people died. Is this going to be recorded somewhere apart from the legal papers of the Royal Commission?
Yep.
And I approached the principal of my school and I said, I'd like to write the stories of these people in a book with my students. Because I have a group, a special group of students after school. They're all gifted in English and I teach them poetry.
Beautiful.
And together we write books.
And these are the students.
And this is the result. This is the result. Together I taught them poetry and we used the testimonies from the Royal Commission, and we turn them into poetry and short stories.
Yeah.
And then people asked me, John, why did you do that? Because no one else in Australia has written a book about the Black Saturday fires.
Yeah.
And I said to them, because I come from a country where I know what suffering is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want this suffering to be forgotten. 140 people, 45 people in our area are suffering because they lost relatives.
Yeah.
Two of my daughter's English teachers were burnt in the fire in their homes, people that I knew.
Yeah.
And it's been an amazing story, because on the 10th anniversary in 2009, the fire ambulance and the police found out about it. Ah. And they had a conference on the 10th anniversary to reflect on what they did 10 years ago. And they found out about the book, and they invited me and the students to their conference. And we read the stories and the poems to them, and there was a lot of emotion in the room.
I can just imagine, because, I mean, you're an Australian of Cypriot background, born in Cyprus. You're teaching a school of multicultural students. I'm just looking at the names here. There are Italian surnames, there's a Greek surname, there's I'm assuming it's an Indian surname, Anglo-Saxon surname. Like, basically, there is a selection of people with heritage from all over the world living, coexisting in the northern suburbs of Melbourne, reflecting on this very painful moment in time together.
Absolutely.
At your, with your initiative and your leadership. I mean, again, I look forward, and I say the word reluctantly because obviously it will be painful to read this.
It is painful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate that, and I think it's marvelous what you've done. This snapshotting a moment in time, albeit a negative one, it would certainly help with the healing. And
absolutely.
And I do see this in Cyprus as well, with some of the poets like Neshe Yassin and others that write poetry about the conflict or the post-conflict and the rapprochement and reconciliation process. If I'm not mistaken, did I read correctly that you translated also some indigenous works?
Yes, I'm currently, that's right. I'm currently, for the last 2 years, I've been translating the poetry of Aboriginal Australians in the Greek language.
That's right, yes.
Yes, and I actually presented a paper at the University of Nicosia last year when I visited.
Okay.
I presented the paintings and the poetry of the Australian Aboriginal peoples.
Yeah.
It's something that I think that we owe them.
Because
as I say in one of my poems in this book, they've looked after this nation for 60,000 years. They did not destroy anything of its natural richness, like the fauna and the plants and the animals, for us to come to this country and restore our lives, because a lot of us are coming from destroyed countries.
Can I just pull that out for a second? That's really important. A lot of people think of Indigenous Australians and then the first settlers that were white Europeans and then other kinds of Europeans and then the rest of the world came here, migrated here, settled here. And a lot of it is just seen as settling and taking opportunity. It's interesting you say that a lot of us came here to heal ourselves because Australia was built on post-war, the majority, I mean, like up until World War II, it was only about 1 million people.
That's right.
After World War II, it jumped to 10-something million. So basically, it was a country made up of World War refugees, migrants, survivors.
Yes.
Economic migrants that absolutely then came to Australia, healed, rebuilt, and went on to become quite successful. And you're right, along the way, we forgot who was here before us. To a point, it's understandable.
Who looked after the country.
Yes.
It was them.
Yeah. I mean, we came and found a place ready for inhabitation, basically.
Exactly.
At the hands of somebody who had been here for 60,000 years and hadn't ruined it. And it is nice to see over the last, probably the last decade, but only in the last few years, really, there's been a hard effort by the authorities and NGOs and individuals to build that bridge with the ancient history of Australia. Reconciled with Indigenous Australians. I've also seen it with the government. I mean, we've had Indigenous exhibitions in Cyprus. We've had Indigenous dance troupes and youth groups come over and engage with the Cypriot community.
Lovely.
Now, the Cypriots were incredibly well impressed with Indigenous Australia and really took to it. And there was a lot of similarities in the cultures as well, like the family structure, the cousins and aunties and all these, a lot of similarities. So when I first came across you translating Indigenous works and storytelling and whatnot into Greek, I was very excited by this because up until now it was only in English for the Cypriot audience.
Yeah.
So this is going to speak to so many more Cypriots. Greek Cypriots, anyway. It's going to speak to a lot more of them and expose them to the truths of Australia because they don't know the whole story of Australia. They only know the last bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also, on my last book, which, sorry, I forgot to give you, but I will give it to you. The last book that I published is called Poems of Love and Hope for Cypriot Refugees. And what I did last year, I asked the poets of Australia who believe that there should be justice in Cyprus and who believe that there are people who are still suffering to send them messages through their poetry. 40 poets, Greek Australians from all over Australia, sent me their poems, all dedicated to Cypriot refugees. And I published it into a book.
Okay.
And in that book, on the front cover, I chose to put an Aboriginal painting by Albert Namajira.
I know that name, yes.
And what's the reason I did that? The reason and I explained that in Cyprus, and people were very impressed. Yeah. The reason I did that is because them, like us, they lost their land.
Mm.
And everybody was telling them, you'll never get your land back. But it took one Aboriginal person who was not even a politician. He was a gardener. He looked after the gardens of Queensland University. And he studied law in the library after his work, not as a student, but as a citizen. He wrote all the law books they had about English law. He challenged the Australian government. And in 1992, he won the land back after 200 years for the Aborigines.
Yeah.
And my message to Cypriots is we have a common pain and a common desire. We want our land back.
Mm-hmm.
And my message is let's learn from the Aborigines. Let's not give up hope.
Mm-hmm.
With civilized means, with peaceful means, we will get our land back.
And I think what I want to side note from that, because a lot of people here in Australia, and I guess in Cyprus as well, think that when we say getting our land back, a lot of Australians have this image that, oh, that means we're going to bulldoze all the towers in Melbourne CBD and, you know, revert it to 60,000 years ago, you know, forest and rivers. Yeah. That's not exactly the case. It's a case of whether it's reconstitution via other properties, other lands, or recognition of land. Like here in Australia, for our listeners, listen, what's impressed me, anywhere you go, whether you're walking into a mall or a government building, even many restaurants, cafes, public sites, you'll see signs at the entrance saying, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land. We welcome you to, you know, whether it's Wurundjeri or the Kulin Nation or different kinds of indigenous groups. As I was driving up and down the entire eastern seaboard of Australia, you would have welcome to certain towns, like the modern day names of towns. And then a few meters later, you would have welcome to, and then be the indigenous name for the region, you know. A lot of people don't know that Melbourne's original name is Narm, N-A-R-R-M. So it's interesting to see people now starting to learn the original names of towns. And it made me think of Cyprus. It made me think, you know, whilst not every refugee may go to their exact home, or if they're around still and young enough to go back, but, you know, but it would be nice to see, you know, the signs entering villages saying, welcome, whatever the name they've put now in Turkish, excuse me, but to also say the name in Greek, the original indigenous name, let's say. It would be a way of showing respect, recognition, reconciliation, kind of like an apology in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may very well be too little too late, as it is here in Australia, but it is a step in the right direction, and it's a big step. And it shows confidence, because by not doing this, it shows you're not confident or that you're hiding behind something.
Yes.
But by acknowledging it, you start dealing with it.
Yeah. But in reality, Costa, the people who survived the war, Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots, They were all victims, but at the same time, they don't hold any animosity. And to give you an example, when the borders opened, I went to my home, and I was born inside my home. I was born in my bed, in the bedroom where I was sleeping in 1974. And I knocked on the door, and there was an old couple. And I said, hello, I'm Yanis, and I was born in this house. Can I come in?
Yeah.
I didn't say this is my house, not to provoke them. I said, I was born inside this bedroom. Can I come in and see it? And they opened up their arms and they started crying.
Yeah.
I said, why are you crying? And they said, because we're from Paphos and we know this is your home. And we feel really bad that we live in the home you were born in. We'd like to go back to Paphos and we'd like you to have your home back.
Yeah, we'd like where our home is.
Exactly. Yeah, so, and that shows humanity, that shows culture. And it shows that if we're left alone without the politicians and the military, we can have a paradise, because Cyprus was a paradise before 1974.
Look, I need to tell you, because I mean you live in Australia. I know that you're very much in contact with Cyprus and you know what's going on. I know that. But living there the last nearly 20 years now, I'm so pleased to see that on a daily basis, I can live and interact with my Turkish Cypriot fellow countrymen, country people. patriots.
Yeah. Well, they are patriots. Yeah,
compatriots. Yeah.
They love Cyprus equally as we love it.
And it's like I grew up in Australia hearing about the division and the separation and not being able to see Turkish Cypriots, not being able to cross over. And so in my time, I've seen the gates open. I've seen the interaction begin. I've seen the coexistence. Granted, we're still divided militarily. Granted, we still have the green line dividing the island and checkpoints and whatnot. But I believe that we have cracked the dam.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The water's leaking out.
Yes.
People like Tatar are desperately trying to do like the little boy with his finger in the hole in the dam in the Netherlands back in the day in the history books. He's trying to prevent the leaking and the water is just pushing through this dam. And it will burst. Okay. It will burst.
Exactly. I believe in people. I believe in people.
And look, there's not many conflicts in the world where eventually it hasn't restored to a just resolution. I mean, it may not be perfect.
Yes.
And we have to be realistic. It's not going to be perfect. Not everyone's going to go home. First of all, not everyone's alive anymore. It's been 50 years.
Absolutely.
There will be compromises. There will be painful moments. But the sooner it happens, the better. But every day that goes by, it is getting harder. But on the other hand, and as I said, I was interviewed on 3XY Radio LS here in Melbourne the other day by the lovely Lambrianim. And she had mentioned to me, like, is it getting harder? Everyone's telling us it's getting harder. And I said, well, it is to a point. It's getting harder, yes, because it's harder for everyone to go back home if they're not alive anymore or they're living overseas or they've had great-great-grandchildren now and they don't want to leave where they are. On the other hand, it could possibly get easier because the younger generation may not have the animosity or the regret or the bad memories. They don't have the experience of peaceful coexistence, but they also don't have the experience of the violence and the trauma. So I'm seeing the youth today, especially in Nicosia, in the old town, I live right next to it. I see it daily. People in Bafos, people in Carinia, they might not see it, but people in Nicosia see it, where Greek and Turkish Cypriots stroll across the green line, sit in each other's cafes,
absolutely,
you know, work together. Mm. They basically, I'm not going to be politically correct when I say that, but they flip the finger to the military and the leaders that are hardline and absolutely move forward.
Absolutely. And I think that the fact that the Turkish Cypriots are crossing the line and having celebrations, having festivals, having concerts, and they go back to the occupied area knowing that the Turkish army is still there, observing them.
Yeah,
I admire these people.
They're brave.
They're brave. Because let's not forget that 9 Turkish Cypriot journalists have been murdered by who knows who because they were actually fighters for reunification. Now, we haven't, in the Greek side, no one has killed, thank God, a journalist for saying, let's reunite. But it just shows how they live under the danger and the threat, and yet they do believe that the island should reunite and not split up.
And I think another point of note is that we talk about, as Greek Cypriots, we would say we live next to an occupation, occupation of our land, whatever, but next to it. We don't live under it.
Yes.
But Turkish Cypriots live under a regime that many of them are against.
Yes.
And to fight against that, to fight with or against Greek Cypriots for reunification, whatever, it is an uphill battle. It's a draconian battle. And they are brave.
Yes,
they are brave, and I mean, like, I can't commend them enough. Let's come back to Melbourne for a second. Now, the last book I'm holding in my hand is a poetic history of Melbourne. It's an anthology of poems and short stories by students of Marymead Catholic College. Tell me a little bit about this book. First of all, it's got my favorite building. It's my second favorite building in Melbourne. It's Flinders Street Station. A little fun fact: you might not know this, probably you do. But there was an architectural company that was building a train station, designing a train station for Melbourne and a train station for New Delhi in India.
Yes.
And the plans got mixed and the Victorian-style train station got built in was in Mumbai, I think.
Yes.
Not New Delhi, Mumbai. And the Indian style, Oriental style, yeah, got built in Melbourne instead. Yeah. But lucky for us, this is a unique...
No one's lost.
No one's lost. Everyone won here.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's got one of my favorite buildings in Melbourne, on the front cover.
It's an iconic point of meeting in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Everybody knows the station. Mm-hmm. And it has survived so many hundreds of years.
Yes.
However, I reflected after we finished the other book, The Poetic, which was a very sad story of Melbourne, the people who were victims of the fires. My students and I reflected, what is our next project? What can we write?
Mm-hmm.
And as a poet, I believe in writing to serve people. I don't believe in writing to serve myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggested to the students, why don't we study the history of Melbourne and turn it into poetry and say the truth? Because there are a lot of untruths, of course, being said as well, because of the, as we spoke before, the issue with how the Aborigines were treated. So we studied the history of Melbourne for over a year, and it took us another year to turn the important moments of its history into poetry.
Amazing.
And then my colleagues at the school who teach English and history and other subjects, they read it and they said, John, there's no such a book anywhere in Australia.
Interesting.
And how come it took a person who's Greek to write the history of Melbourne into poetry? What motivated you? And I said to them that this city can be an example of harmony, coexistence, welcoming of refugees all over the world. It's a beautiful city. I felt that the people of Melbourne were beautiful when I first arrived here. They treated me well. I did not face any racism, any xenophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so well looked after by everywhere I worked. I worked in the government, I worked in the universities, in schools, and people were embracing. And I thought that I owe this city back.
That's great.
We wrote this book to show how Melbourne has a beautiful history. And it can be an example to the whole world.
I like on the back cover of the book, I want to read this out for the listeners. So it's Ode to Melbourne, Melbourne, Mother of Marvels and Miracles. Marvel the Wurrung and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation who preserved for centuries the forests, the streams, the rivers, the woodlands, the wetlands, the koalas and the kangaroos, the wombats and kookaburras. A remarkable conservation admired by the next generations long after and forever in eternity. Marvel the immigrant pioneers who built the busy ports, the endless railroads, the homes to nations on the move, a melting pot of cultures, a honeycomb of languages and songs, and the desire to belong. Melbourne, a symbol of friendship and fairness for workers, refugees, travellers and foreigners, a city of harmony, a composed symphony, a vast orchestra. That's written by you, John Milithias. And that is, I think it's been a long time since I've read something that speaks to me and tells me what Melbourne is in one piece.
Thank you.
But I've just read it now in front of you live, and it's just remarkable. It really describes Melbourne, the place that received close to 80,000 Cypriots.
Yes.
80% of them being Greek Cypriot, 20% being Turkish Cypriot, a city, that's received hundreds of thousands of Greeks, tens of thousands of Turks, hundreds of thousands of Italians, hundreds of thousands of Chinese, hundreds of thousands of Indians, hundreds of thousands of English, and it's all melted together. And today it is reaching out to the indigenous, the Wurrung and Wurundjeri people, the Kulin Nation. It really is a remarkable city, as we say in Greek, bros mimisi, like a good one to mimic.
Exactly.
An
example to follow.
An example to follow and learn from, the good and the bad.
Yes.
And one thing I've always loved about Australia is that when something is bad, it says it and shares it.
Mm.
And that's what we're seeing now with the reconciliation with the previous generations, and also other things like victims of domestic abuse that weren't taken serious by the governments or the authorities in the past, police brutality in the past. I always find that this country manages to come around and correct itself sooner or later. It does take time, but it does eventually happen here. I think a lot of places like Cyprus can learn from this.
Yes.
Cyprus has waited 5 to 6 decades to begin healing the wounds of its conflict. But I think it has started, and I think that we Australian Cypriots have a lot to contribute to that.
Yes.
Mm. And I want to see more of you and your engagement with Cyprus, whether it's from afar or in person. Maybe we can have a look at maybe getting some Cypriot youth over to Melbourne, because I know they go to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I think Melbourne is a better example for them to experience.
Yeah.
So we can have a talk about that.
Of course.
What are your last thoughts before we finish up? What do you miss the most about Cyprus?
What I miss about Cyprus is the love of culture,
mm-hmm.
as I experienced it before 1974.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want that to be lost.
Yeah.
That's why I'm encouraging. Some people have criticized Cypriots that they write too much poetry. There's too many poets in Cyprus, too many books. And and they criticize them that they're not full of quality. And I wrote a message when I read that from Australia to the Writers Association. I said, in my eyes, a country with many poets is a country of happiness.
It's a rich country.
Why do you want less poets?
Yeah.
Why do you want to stop people from writing poetry?
I don't think we need more accountants and lawyers, to be honest with you.
No, we need everyone.
Politicians.
But to me, books... Yeah. Anton Chekhov said, it's because of books there is beauty in this world.
Mm.
So why do you want to stop people? So as I said, I miss Cyprus because I know people, at least the generation that I grew up with, we used to love learning. We used to love books. We used to love culture. And we wanted to work for Cyprus. We wanted to go and study overseas, come back, and make this country, like my grandfather used to say, the paradise it was, and make it even better. Unfortunately, it stopped in 1974. Thank goodness, people haven't lost that brotherhood that they had, although the Turkish army is still there. Like you said, you pointed out, there is still brotherhood in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
There's crossover, there's meetings, there's concerts, there's festivals, there's conferences between all the peoples of Cyprus. And I admire that.
Mm-hmm.
And for as long as there is that kind of behavior in Cyprus, that kind of character of people, I'll keep coming back.
And there is still hope for all of
exactly.
us. Exactly. Look, I really look forward to seeing you next time you're back on the island. Or otherwise, I'm going to have to just come back here to Australia and see you again. I'm happy to do that.
I would look for you.
Thank you once again. It's been an absolute honor to record with you today. I mean, it's been many years since you taught me. And again, you're teaching me now. So your job is never done.
We all learn. We all learn together.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Costa. And I can learn from you that you haven't given up. Although you had a beautiful career at the Australian Embassy,
mm-hmm.
I was very happy to see your face at the Australian Embassy when I came to Cyprus. I couldn't meet you, but and the fact that you're actually a person who is like an ancient Greek, would like to talk like Socrates, go to the Agora and ask people questions and say, let's talk. That is a beautiful quality for someone to have.
Yeah.
Continue to have that.
Thank you.
And you are a beautiful human being, and I admire you. Well done.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.